My name is Ryan Luke Winslade, and I am a PK and middle child. I know what it's like to be a misfit, an oddball, a weirdo, but I'm okay with that. If you're like me, you are most certainly welcome. Even if you're not, you'll hopefully enjoy yourself here on Pastor's Middle Kid anyway. We'll talk about stuff and look at things a little differently. All right, let's get started. Welcome to episode 61 of Pastor's Middle Kid. My name's Ryan Luke and it's great to have you listening. This week on the show I have my friend Joshua Calaguire from Boulder, Colorado / Chicago, Illinois, joining via Skype to share about his time home after his discipleship training school that finished last year in March and where he is now and what he's doing in Mazatlan, Mexico. I found this to be a very insightful conversation, not just about what he's been doing specifically, because I know that a number of you haven't met him before, but we talk in depth about a number of things, including how it feels to return home after a missions experience and to not have the type of community around you that you did while you were doing missions and how that can affect your faith negatively. Let's move into this week's unanswered question. Why is it that arm, leg, and eyebrow hairs don't grow at the same rate or as consistently as hairs on the top of your head? This is something I've been thinking about lately, and I'm quite glad that they don't. For the record, I would hate to need haircuts for my eyebrows or my arms or my legs or my big toes. Listener of the week this time around is Reese Dersma. He's been listening fairly consistently to this podcast, and I'm really grateful. I've played a couple of gigs with him over the years. He is the frontman of a band called The Quick and the Dead that released an album last year, and you should check that out. I did an interview with him talking about the album at length, so check that out. It is about 10 or 15 back in the episode count. It's around 45-ish. So check that out. His band's called The Quick and the Dead. This week in music, I have been getting into, once again, Matt and Toby. Matt and Toby are two of the members of my favorite band, Emery, and they also happen to be two of three hosts of the Bad Christian podcast that I like to listen to. Their self-titled album, Matt and Toby, is a little bit experimental as far as acoustic music goes, but hey, that's just the type of music that these guys make. Emery's experimental as well. Matt and Toby's a great record. This song is called Life of the Party, and the song that I'll play this episode out with is called What Plays in My Head. I hope you enjoy this talk with Josh Calaguire, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and leave me a review, like it on Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. So if there's nothing new to say, then let's just say it all again tonight. We had the best times of our lives. Josh Calaguire, welcome back to Pastor's Middle Kit. It has been quite a number of moons since you have joined this podcast. What have you been up to, man?
Well, Since I saw you, I completed my discipleship training school.
Mm-hmm.
I got engaged.
Come on.
I worked 3 jobs at the same time.
And that was in Boulder, right? Boulder, Colorado?
Boulder, Colorado. And then after that, I moved to Mazatlan, Mexico,
mm-hmm.
where I will be residing for the next couple of years.
Nice.
Just as you will be residing in Newcastle, Australia.
Until December, and then I move to the Gold Coast after I get married. Yes. So it's,
that's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
So similar type of thing there. Awesome. So you got engaged. Let me get this right. It was on New Year's Eve?
Mm-hmm.
New Year's Eve. And then on New Year's Day, you left to go to Mexico. Is that right?
At 6 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, my goodness.
We popped champagne with my family and friends at 1 a.m. and we're on a plane at 6.
As you do. Right. Okay.
As we do. Yeah.
And so you've been in Mexico now for a few months. You've just joined staff at the YWAM Center in Mazatlan.
Yes.
So we'll get into that in a little bit.
All right.
But in case people don't remember who you are, could I please have you give a brief bio about yourself?
Awesome. Well, my name is Joshua. I was born in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually was not that long ago.
No.
And let's see. So I've lived in several different places during my life, went to several different high schools and different places, and have switched around a lot. And I've kind of learned to develop a personality that is extremely welcoming and hospitable. And just kind of the type of person that makes friends with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think somewhere down that line, I kind of realized that I was creating a lot of very shallow friendships.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of them. So most of my life, I've been friends with a lot of people, but always seeking depth and never really getting it.
Right.
I was not really a Christian until I did my DTS,
mm-hmm.
Which was only a year and a half ago. And basically changed everything for me because I saw that the reason that I was angry at God was actually something inside myself that I needed to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really big. So yeah. That was really cool. Anyways, the last couple of years I've been living in Colorado with the beautiful mountains and the snow,
mm-hmm.
All the different things, and really just trying to like pursue like what am I passionate about? How can I really use that to serve people?
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, just kind of like trying to chase the voice of God, like wherever He's speaking. So. When I was in Mexico on outreach, God very clearly spoke that I was supposed to stay there. So I thought that was dandy. I was super excited. And it just so happened that the girl I had a crush on my outreach team, God had spoken the same thing. So
ooh.
How fun is that?
Yeah.
So basically, I started to court this said woman, who is now my best friend. She's been my best friend for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Gertie. She was born in Holland, but has spent most of her life in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this year has been like us learning how to incorporate another person into your life.
Yeah.
How to do that well, how to love each other in seasons where stuff can suck or when each other is growing and doesn't know what to do with their lives.
Yeah.
And so, this year has been a lot of beautiful growth, a lot of goodbyes, a lot of beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
But I am very grateful to be Josh.
I'm grateful that you are, Josh. Now, for those listening, Josh, would you be able to let us know briefly why it is you sound kind of muffled and like you're talking to me from, let's say, in the engine room of some power plant somewhere?
Ryan, do you really want to know? It's because I'm doing this podcast from a bathroom.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, I am sitting on a toilet.
That is amazing. Now, I'm sure there are some people listening that are listening on the toilet. I sometimes find myself doing that. Hopefully that wasn't too much information, but for the record, you are not going to the toilet. You are already on the toilet, but not on the toilet as in on the toilet, but as in you're sitting on the toilet.
My trousers are completely fixed to the place where they normally are.
Okay. So yes, that that could be messy.
Yes. I'd also like to say that a lot of my life I have been dreaming of, like, when I have my own house, which will be actually quite soon,
yep,
that the bathroom will actually be my library.
Wow. Okay.
It will be a sanctuary of a place of knowledge and learning.
Mm-hmm. And contemplation. Okay.
Yes. So, I feel like most deep thoughts of my life have happened on a toilet somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I found that too for myself, either on the toilet or in the shower. There's just something about the, I guess, being made to wait, or the slow pace at which you have to go about either of those activities is, I think it enables thinking, deep thinking to happen in a way that we often get distracted from.
I also feel that the bathroom in life is one of the most private places.
Mm-hmm.
And even, let's say, if you're married, like, even your bedroom, like, you're going to share that with at least a person.
Yeah.
And most other places in your life, it's like you may be in the same like office as them, mm-hmm. or you may be in the same vicinity, but I feel like bathrooms are a place where I feel like I find solitude and comfort, and also I never feel rushed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when I can, like, really sit in the things that I'm thinking or feeling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a bit of a brief look at where you are in the vicinity there in Mexico. Now, I want to talk to you, Josh, about what it was like being home after DTS. Now, the reason I want to is because last week on the podcast, I talked to my friend Jake Blankers, who did the Trailblazers DTS a year after you. And he has just gone home after being on outreach in Papua New Guinea. And then his 1 week of debrief. And so I talked to him right before he left. And as somebody that was home for a bit over a year, and somebody that I have had on the podcast in the past, I want to hear what it has been like as, let's say, a person that has re-entered, so to speak, into society at large after finishing a discipleship training school. So what's that been like for you? What was that like for you?
Yeah. It was... it was really a renaissance for me. It felt like being home, but after such a transformative couple months, I felt like my horizons are so much brighter, like my days were so much lighter when I got back. And I spent probably 3 months almost every single day, like, finding hours and hours just to journal and just to process, to be with people, and also to read. I read about 16 or 20 books in like 4 months.
Good grief.
which was, it felt like a renaissance of like what I was believing. I would say like the first couple months after I got home from DTS were just as transforming as my DTS.
Wow.
And it was really remarkable. Just by like some of the stories that I had started to tell to one of the guys that I barely knew when I came back. He basically became one of my best friends, and actually because I started talking about all of the amazing things that like Jesus was doing, like and DTS, mm-hmm. He had no really like Christian background, like had like a lot of like hard stuff in his life, and basically just seemed like we both met each other at a point where like my experiences and like his hunger just like collided.
Oh,
and
come on.
It was just like amazing to like see like all of this come together, and we spent every day together, and we became like brothers, and just to like see like Jesus start to like transform someone's heart right in front of you was just like, it's one of those things where I don't know, you feel like you're in some kind of book, you feel like you're in some kind of movie, mm-hmm. where like I don't know, there really is something to it.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I eventually got 3 jobs, and I was excited to do that. I'd never worked so much in my life, and I think I was just hungry to do that. I think especially since after 3 months of a lot of solitude, a lot of finding things to do. And so I had been looking for jobs, and then all of a sudden I got all 3 of them at the same time.
Wow.
And kind of got thrown into it, which was amazing. I finally, it was really good, but at the same time, started to not really have time for friends, for family, and really for about 6 months of my life, it was like an everyday, just like wake up super early, go to one job, transfer to the second, talk to my girlfriend, Gertie, at the time, and that was it, and it felt like I was just on repeat for several months. And so part of my heart was kind of grieved just because I felt like I was missing out on like the adventure of life while I was doing that. And so that was a really cool season because the jobs that I did, I loved. I got to like work in a tea house, like a Chinese tea house, mm-hmm. that like served like 200 teas.
Wow.
And I got to like become an expert at it, and it was amazing. I got to work for a tech company.
Okay.
I got to work for a paddleboard company on a reservoir, which was super fun.
Yeah. Three jobs that were all pretty similar. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. It was all basically super. Yeah, it was like the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
Especially super refreshing. Cause it's like you want to do one thing, and then all of a sudden, like I'm wearing board shorts on a lake, and then I'm like serving tea to like all these like strange people from Colorado. It was a good time. I like to switch it up.
Yeah.
faith-wise, it was really sweet. It definitely was not a time when I felt like extremely. Like, I felt, like, the presence of the Lord every day. I definitely did not. I think, like, part of that was just, like, I don't think I was as hungry.
Yeah.
And I kind of forgot that, like, every day can be the most incredible thing. And I feel like a lot of the thing was, like, me waiting for God to do something. But coming back into, like, a place that, like, Jesus, like, no other... I realized that a lot of my time was like spent waiting for God when I had known enough, you know.
Yeah.
I had seen Jesus do amazing things, and it was just like my own like doubt and cynicism that was like pushing me away from like actually doing things. Because most of my life I've actually seen like when God actually speaks to me, I'm not gonna know if it's him until I actually do the action and see it on the other side.
Yeah, there's a difference between waiting for God and waiting on God. And yes. I guess from what you've said, that sounds a bit like what you were caught up in was not so much waiting expectantly for God to do something, so much as not really going after him. Because waiting on God requires you to actively seek his presence and then allow him to work out of that, as opposed to, I guess, waiting for him to actively seek your presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also worked in a culture that super duper really doesn't like Christians. Mm-hmm. Is a very like Boulder is a very like liberal town, and so like they have a lot of crazy ideas and crazy opinions, and most of them just like believe that like for their whole life people have just told them that God hates them, and that like God is just politics and conservatives and all these different things. And a lot of times at work it was super hard. Just because, like, they would, like, make fun of Christianity, they would make fun of Jesus and all these different things.
Yeah.
But there was one time when one of the guys that I worked with that was probably, like, the most, like, he hated Christianity. He thought religion was total crap.
Yeah.
Which, and one time I was talking with him, he's like, Josh, I didn't know that you were a Christian. And I was like... And he's like, you give a good name to Christians. And I was like, whoa.
Wow.
And I think that was just like one of those moments where it's like, okay, I may not like be great at having all these arguments against people who like really feel that like God exists and like non-existent person that people just use to hate people. But for just like that small moment, it's like, okay, like there's something to this. And like, I have to just keep trusting that like, God is who he says he is, and like to keep pursuing.
Do you think being home in an environment that, as you said, didn't actively encourage you to pursue God, do you think, obviously there were some negative things that resulted from that, perhaps a lack of growth in some areas where you wanted more, but do you think overall that had a negative impact on your relationship with God, or were you able to find ways to continue to grow despite being in an environment like that?
Yeah. I would say I think it really did take a hit on me.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I was just in a season where I was really just all by myself.
Yeah.
Didn't really have much community. And kind of just felt like I was waiting for new seasons.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of things to look forward to. I know I was coming back to Mexico. I knew that Gertie was going to move to Colorado to live with me, or like to live nearby for like three months. And so there's a lot to look forward to for that. So it felt like I just had to get through it and that God was on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a great mentality to have.
Yeah.
Just because I felt like I kept waiting for the next season to come so I could finally jump into it, you know? And so Mexico for me was almost this light at the end of the tunnel. Mm. I was like, finally, when I get there, it's just going to be amazing. I'm going to be in a YWAM community again, which is just like, I'll just be awesome. Just totally... killing it, on fire, doing all these crazy things.
Yeah.
But had not realized how much I was going the opposite direction until I showed up here, and I was like, actually not that easy. There's a lot of things I need to take care of that have kind of built up in there.
Yeah, I found something similar to that happened to me before my DTS, and that was I hadn't really been involved much with YWAM for a number of years prior to that. But both my older brothers had already done DTS, so I had a fresh understanding of what it was like. And I signed up and I was accepted and I was waiting to go to Brisbane, and I was so excited to be in a place where God could fix me. God could fix all the things that were wrong with me. And I found that having Brisbane as that light at the end of the tunnel for me, similar to how Mazatlan was for you, I found that I wasn't going about preparing my heart properly for that.
Yeah, you start getting lazy. Yeah,
absolutely. Getting
it's like I can be messed up, you know, I can do this thing, I'll get it fixed eventually.
Like, yep.
I have all my DTS.
Yep, yep, that's right. It's like having a problem with your car, not that I know this yet, and still praying for God to show us the right car to buy, but it's like having, I guess, a problem with part of the engine in your car, and knowing there's a problem, hearing a funny noise, the attention light is on in your dashboard, yet you think, well, I have a service booked for 2 months from now, so I may as well keep on driving it till then. But because you keep driving it with that problem, there's another problem that comes up to compensate for the other one, and then one thing leads to another, and all of a sudden
you've got a bad car.
Yeah, you may as well just buy a new car because it's going to cost that much to fix. So I think for me it was like that. Granted, I was 19, so I mean that's going back 4 years now. But at the time, like I said, I didn't really have any recent connection with YWAM, so I viewed it as the promised land. And so I guess while I was wandering around the desert metaphorically, I was not really caring what I was doing.
Yeah.
Because once I got there, everything was going to be fixed magically. And there was grace. I mean, and there actually was when I got there. But something that God showed me was that you don't keep on sinning so that grace may abound. Because God's goodness doesn't just apply to the once you get to the point that you think it applies now as well. And I didn't get that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
That's huge. Ryan, do you remember let's see, it was the very start of my DTS and we were painting and sanding benches on the coast.
Yeah, I remember that. That was for CityServe, an initiative in the local church in Newcastle. We were volunteering out on Stockton Beach, and we were painting and sanding some picnic tables right by the sand that had been quite weathered and worn and were in need of a new coat. So I remember that day quite vividly. My fiance Fiona was actually on your DTS, and she was in our little group of people that was doing that with the benches, but she was paired with Leroy, who is the ex-Amish guy that's been on Pastor's Middle Kid before. It's all coming together now. But she was a little bit bummed that she wasn't paired with me.
ever since the start.
That's right. But I remember that day quite a lot.
Yes. I had explained to you basically the weeks coming up to my DTS.
Yeah.
And how they were some of the darkest days of my life. Right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of choices that I had made because I felt like I was in a place of like, okay, my life's about to get turned around. Just do whatever. It doesn't matter anymore. Which is it was a pretty bad place to be in. But luckily, somehow, I showed up on a plane.
Yep.
Showed up in Newcastle, Australia, and there was grace, right?
Yeah, totally. And even when you were... When I had you on the podcast initially, it was probably 2 or 3 weeks into your DTS. It was not very long. And even at that stage, you said things like, I'm not sure about all of this. I don't know if I believe anything that's happening here. I think everyone's full of crap. And nothing from my life is indicating the contrary. So I don't really know if it's worth me going through with it. And I'm so glad that you did, because even in the midst of you having a huge amount of doubt and not even believing half the time what people were saying, you still mm-hmm. knew that there was something here that you could get out of it, and you were open to it. And as a result, would you say that your life did turn around as a result of your DTS?
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where I would be a fool to say that Jesus is not who he says he is. It's gotten to the point in my life where it would literally be idiotic to say that.
Yeah.
Because of what I've seen, because of what he has spoken. And I feel like I had this crazy realization after I was home. I said to myself while I was driving, wait a minute, why is it so hard to pursue God? If God was not who he says he is, if there's nothing to this, why does it always feel like everything is against me? Why is it so hard to try to be quote-unquote holy? Why is it so hard to actually pursue and do the things he's saying? Why does it feel like there's always things against me? And you start to realize, okay, I think there's a war. You know, I think there's things that are literally trying to stop me from doing this. And that was a really crazy thing. And I fought on DTS back and forth the entire time. And people always ask, so like, when was the moment? When was like the moment when everything changed for you? I was like, honestly, I was pissed for most of DTS and like didn't understand what was going on. And really the only thing that I can really point to though was a moment was when I was on a flight back to Denver, Colorado after like 6.5 months. And I was looking back over my city and I said to myself, okay, what am I going to tell everyone? What just happened? You know, was it nothing? Was it just me finding something that was not there, or was it actually like, is this going to change things? And yeah, a lot had changed. And I would just be a fool by now to say that like it's just been a bunch of crap, you know.
Yeah, going back to what you said about it being so difficult to actually be quote unquote holy. And how it does feel like there is a war over your soul. I don't remember where I heard it, whether I read it or heard it on a podcast or something recently, but I heard somewhere somebody say something, this is so vague, along the lines of when God picks who he picks, when God chooses us, when he wins us, so to speak, if we have salvation, then we are his. There is very, very little that can keep us from staying in his hand. Basically, the only thing that could make us fall is our own decisions to abandon ship. But so there is not so much a war over our destiny, our eternal destiny, so much as there is a war over our effectiveness here and now. So if you have confidence in the salvation of God and you feel like he has saved you, then you can take that to the bank. It will be there forever. And you don't have to worry about your eternal destiny. You don't have to worry about going to hell if you accidentally slip up one time, because God has you in the palm of his hand and he will always forgive. But here and now, it feels like such a colossal battle is taking place, because it feels like every single thing you do that is wrong, you're being handed back over to the enemy, when in reality your effectiveness for the sake of the kingdom of light is just being squashed.
That's huge. I think that's starting to actually, I love that idea, because it's I've always just kind of had the idea that you know, if you are not like chasing to like have your identity in Christ, to chase to like actually find it in him, to live in that, if you're not doing that, you're really going in the other direction. And that's what I thought, but I love hearing that. That's actually, I feel like that is huge. So that is cool. I like that a lot, Ryan.
Yeah. Well, I can't exactly take credit for it. I paraphrased wherever I got it from, and I'm sure that there's somebody out there that knows vaguely what I'm talking about. So if you do know, hit me up on Facebook or Twitter and let me know where I got that from, because it's definitely not my own. But Josh, something that you and I have as a shared interest is a certain series of books. And these books are ones that I told you about as ad nauseum on your DTS. The sci-fi trilogy by C.S. Lewis, and that is Out of the Silent Planet, Perelandra, and That Hideous Strength.
And no one knows about them.
Yes, yes, that's right, because they're not his most famous books, because they're not any of his theological books, Screwtape Letters or The Chronicles of Narnia. But yes, C.S. Lewis did write other things other than that, and he wrote a pretty cool science fiction trilogy that... Would you say it incorporates spiritual themes into a science fiction understanding of the world? Is that kind of what happens?
I would say that it is like Narnia for adults. Even though Narnia is for adults, because C.S. Lewis is brilliant.
Yeah.
The themes and like the things that C.S. Lewis speaks about in this trilogy, it feels like the first time reading Narnia.
Yeah.
And just how magical it is. To get into the mind and to see C.S. Lewis like paint a reality of like our souls in a way that is so welcoming because it seems so outlandish. But at the same time, you still get to see those things that are so easy to sympathize with.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like, you know how like people always wanted to like make the Bible into cartoons so that cartoon people could love it? I feel like that's almost what's happening in these books, is that the characters and like the scenes that he creates bring the gospel in such a way that is so animated. I don't know, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Now the thing about this science fiction trilogy is that, like you said, he's creating worlds for adults. But the thing about Narnia is that there are moments of good and evil, dark and light, that are understandable for everybody. But with these books, the moments of darkness are darker. So when there is evil present, it actually gives you a bit of an eerie feeling. While
you also get to see the power of it. It's scary.
Yeah, totally. And now that comes from Jack's whole life of his whole life experience, and knowing how evil feels and knowing how good feels, and understanding somewhat the interaction between those two. And the Chronicles of Narnia is brilliant. I mean, I just finished writing a whole album of songs about it that I'm going to look at recording this year. Yeah, I'm sure you'd like it.
You're my hero.
Yeah, I get that a lot from you. But with these books, the issues addressed are less, less black and white in nature. It covers a lot of gray areas in how we interact with a person that is promoting evil, so to speak, or something like that, and how we view creation. And and he has a really cool take on angels actually being these celestial beings that that live in space, and the archangels being these guardians of each of these planets. And it's so cool. It's a little bit heady, and the fact that the main character is a linguist, actually based off J.R.R. Tolkien himself, Ransom, he is you're often inside his head and seeing the way that his brain works and how he solves problems and interacts with these creatures in their own native tongue by picking up the suffixes and prefixes and everything. That's mostly in Out of the Silent Planet. Paralandra, yes. The book that you have been really digging into lately, I found to be the most challenging of the three. It was the darkest, but it also had the lightest points, as far as my opinion goes. And it's something that I think everybody could really do with giving a read. If you can handle a little bit of type of feeling while you're reading something, knowing that there will be the victory for the good and the light side in the end.
I feel like that's what, I mean, most of Paralandra, you're just feeling hopeless.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when I either travel or just get to be in big expanses of people, that's one of the hardest things for me. Is like,
yeah.
I feel like a lot of the world is just like, wow, there's so much darkness, so much, like, how is this ever going to change?
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like reading Narnia, actually, reading through every book from start to finish, it's like getting a picture of what the page of God looks like.
Mm.
So, like, let's say that human life, you know how we do things linear, like how we have timelines. It's like,
yep,
from
beginning
start to finish,
and end.
Josh,
yep.
Is like, yes, let's say for all of Earth, and then God is the page, right? He's like, he's in every single second, but you're also inside the page. And I feel like Narnia, it's like you finally get to see a glimpse of everything from start to finish.
Yeah.
And when you finish the book, you're like, yes, there were hopeless times. There were so many dark things that happened.
Yeah.
But like, there was such a beautiful plan ever since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why would we ever doubt that? So personally, that's just like, I love that. I always feel like when people are like, I feel like there's just so much darkness, like, kind of the question of like, why is there death if God is good, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, just read Narnia. You'll understand. And you'll feel okay about it too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And obviously we're not saying that Narnia is gospel, but it is a good perspective to take into account, I think, in our understanding and perception of the goodness of God. And seeing how C.S. Lewis crafted Aslan in such a way to have limitations, but also to be boundless and to be both a gentle cat that comforts Shasta in the desert by the tombs at night, and also being the lion that protects and prowls, seeking its prey. I think it's a healthy perspective to have, and that I think is something that for the most part it's a little bit contested within Christianity. It's this these different perspectives of God, which when they are written may are most likely meant to just be taken figuratively. And take for example the book The Shack. Have you ever read The Shack by William P. Young?
Someday I will.
Okay. So when I read The Shack, it was a few years after all the controversy about it being heretical and all that. Now that the claim for heresy is right back at it, because the movie has either come out or is coming out soon. But when I read The Shack, I read it as a story that you can learn from. In the same way that you could learn from a classic book of any kind by any author. And if you take, for example, The Lord of the Rings, within that universe, J.R.R. Tolkien created Iluvatar, who is God Almighty.
Yes.
And then God Almighty created all these demigods that help create Middle-earth out of nothing. So he has this view of God within this universe, and you can glean things from it. You can learn. Obviously, it's up to us to hold it up against the Bible, and if it doesn't quite hold up, maybe asking God what we can learn from it, despite it not being the gospel itself. And Narnia does that, and with the shack, there are moments where I really felt like God was speaking to me about his character that the book got right. And then there were moments where I felt a little, I'm not sure about this.
Yeah.
And nevertheless, taking different perspectives into account when forming our own is crucial. I mean, it's one thing to have natural talent for art, for visual art. Mm-hmm. But if you don't study other art forms, and if you don't draw influence from somewhere, then you won't be able to hone the craft as much as you can. And with our perspective of God, we have the Bible as this incredible account of who God is. And mm-hmm. that is our primary source. And if there are other things that can open up a certain characteristic of God for us, in the case of Aslan, understanding how he can be both gentle and powerful and fearsome at the same time.
Yeah.
I found Narnia extremely helpful for me in that sense. And while reading The Shack, I understood God's compassion in the midst of grief a little bit better than I did just by reading the Bible. So I think, and I want to hear your take on this too, as we begin to wrap things up, that drawing influence from a number of different sources, and then prayerfully weighing them up with what the Bible says about God mm-hmm. is ultimately a very healthy way to develop our understanding of who he is.
Yeah, I love that. I think one of the number one things that actually really tripped me up last year while I was trying to fight the fight, you know, to continue to find God each day, to like find time to really get my heart in a place where I can see and hear like what he's doing in Boulder, in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing I really tripped up was that I think I got tired of hearing what the Bible had to say because I thought I knew it.
Yeah.
I thought that I got what I could get out of it, and really started to pursue other people's books. Right, I told you I've read like 20 books.
Yeah,
and trying to like find my like daily bread in that, and really finding a lot of great things that I knew about God.
Yeah,
or like could know about God, but not finding his heart. And that really tripped me up, and so I even found a couple times books negatively affecting me. Dietrich Bonhoeffer
mm-hmm.
wrote a book called The Cost of Discipleship
yep.
that I'd heard great things about. I started to read, and I was not mature enough to read it because when he talked about the cost of discipleship, I was like, oh my goodness, the call of Christ is impossible.
Yeah.
And like, geez, and it just, I felt like every single thing I had done in my life was not perfect enough for like what Christ was asking. And Dietrich basically in the first part of his book is like undermining like all of the people that came to him looking for different things.
Yeah.
And how, like, Christ every single time was answering them, like, picking at their soul and then, like, pushing them away and, like, evading and trying different things. And it made me, like, oh, my goodness, this is so hard. How, like, could people ever get this? And when I started to read this, I started looking at other people's lives and seeing how they were going wrong and how they couldn't see it right. And they didn't understand the true call of Christ, and I stopped looking at myself, and it was a dangerous place to be. And I had to put the book down. I was like, I can't do this anymore. It is, I'm not ready for this at all. And so yeah, there were several books that like I had to stop reading just because I was like, okay, I need to get back to like truth. I need to get back to like immediate, like, all right, like what, like this is great what you're talking about, but like what is the call of Christ right yeah. now in my life? What am I seeing God doing right now?
Mm. When it comes to those types of books that have a measure of commentary on the character of God, like I said, it's healthy to draw from a lot of different places in crafting our understanding. Nevertheless, it's like hearing a secondhand. It's like hearing somebody talk about your friend, or talk mm-hmm. about your dad, and sharing all these great things about what your dad did and who. But most of the time, it's who your dad is. But if your whole understanding of who your dad is comes from other people telling you, and not from you experiencing and interacting with him yourself, you're going to get an inaccurate perspective. You're
probably going to get disinterested.
Yeah, yeah, most likely. And you will feel more removed from who he is. And it will be far yes. less enticing, I guess, to interact with him at all. Yes. And sometimes it could even get to the point where you only want to hear what other people have to say about God through these books because the Bible doesn't seem interesting enough. And what I often find myself doing is while I'm reading them, it actually makes me disinterested in the books themselves and oftentimes forces me to go back and read the Bible for myself. So in that way, it's kind of like it's probably not the intended effect of these books. Most people write them so that people will read them and then be drawn to read the Bible in a different kind of light. Whereas for me, I start reading and then put it on the shelf and never pick it up again because I find it boring and want to find out who God is for myself. With that said, I completely understand where you're coming from with feeling like the Bible is like you know it all. Like it isn't new anymore. It's not fresh.
It's a bad place to be.
Yes. Yes. And for, I would say, probably the majority of my life, especially from teenage years onwards, I have felt like that. Being a pastor's kid, going to Sunday school every single week, knowing all the answers, scoring straight A's on any Bible assignment that I did in high school. I completely understand how that feels, and I know that it's bad. It just so happens that right now I'm reading through the book of Proverbs, one chapter every day, because there's 31 chapters and 31 days in March. And so I've found that to be a really helpful thing for me because I've tried a number of times in the past to read through the Bible, Genesis to Revelation. I sometimes make it as far as Chronicles or Kings, and then as soon as I hit Psalms or the Prophets, it's just I can't get through because I don't think I have the right motivation behind doing it yet, or I haven't yet. I would love to read it through though.
I feel like sometimes when I get so deep into the Old Testament, I kind of sometimes lose sight of the heart of God sometimes. Mm. And I'm like, I just need to go to Romans. I just need to go to Corinthians, get some spiritual milk.
Yep. Yep. Well, I mean, maybe a good way to do it, and I'm sure there are people that have done whole Bible studies that are screaming at their phones right now, telling me that I'm wrong or leading you in the wrong direction or something. But to read an Old Testament book or two and at the same time read through a New Testament book, and in that way keep the, I think particularly keeping the Gospels in mind as you're reading through the books of the law, reading through the first five books of the Bible, reading through Matthew at the same time, I'm sure would be quite beneficial because it is for the Jews and their Jewish understanding of the law and how Jesus fulfills that. So that could be a really good way to do it, and then pick an epistle for one of the prophets or something like that and read them through simultaneously, like a chapter from one day and then a chapter from the other the next day. Something like that could be a way to not only read through the whole Bible, which is something that I've always wanted to do and never managed to, but also keeping the end game in mind
Ryan, maybe this is it, man.
Maybe this is it. Maybe this is actually God speaking to me through my own mouth because I'm stubborn and don't want to hear it from anybody else. So who knows? I'll probably end up doing that, honestly.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Josh, you've been serving in student communications at YWAM Mazatlan.
Yes.
Making phone calls, answering phone calls, telling people about DTS and the different opportunities within YWAM Mazatlan and YWAM in general. And it's a it's a role that is something that I used to do. And when I knew you, when you were on your DTS, that was my full-time role. So it's encouraging to hear from you in past conversations that you've been enjoying yourself and you're learning a lot about what it means to be an effective communicator and not only relaying information in a way that is efficient, but also in a way that values the person you're talking to. And that is something that I have picked up from you, especially during this conversation here on PMK. It's been great having you on, and I look forward to hearing from you in the future. Once something else interesting has happened in your life. I'm kidding.
I'll tell you in the next thing.
All right. Good. Well, look, if there's ever anything that, that comes across your path that you think would be interesting to discuss with me on the podcast, I would love to have you back on. And I'm sure there are many people that would love to hear your point of view on something in the future, myself being probably foremost among them. And there are some people that, that did DTS with you that have listened to this podcast. And so we want to give a big shout out to those people from October 2015.
That's true.
15, 16. That always throws me out. I did DTS in 2015, 16. But that's fairly usual for people in your part of the world. But we don't usually do it like that in Australia because our school years are per calendar year.
That sounds good.
You had a great bunch of people on your DTS and you were one of my favorites. I can't say you were my favorite because I'm engaged to my favorite.
That's okay, I'll take second place.
That's right, and you're engaged to your favorite, so I think that's I think that's an okay place for us to be in. Anyway, this has been Josh Calaguire on Pastor's Middle Kid episode number 61. It's great to have you listening, everybody. Please tune in next time. Follow Pastor's Middle Kid on Facebook. You can find it just by searching it. And I would love to hear some feedback and have you featured on Listener of the Week. So keep an ear out, keep an eye out. Be ready for what Pastor's Middle Kid is throwing out there in the future. Very exciting times. Josh Calaguire, once again, thank you for being on the podcast.
Love you,
Ray. Alright, until next time. Try that again. Until next time, everyone. Uru. Staring at your